Number three.
Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the SF and Fantasy Short Fiction Podcast. This week's story is another in the Echoes series, and it's called A Gift by Jake Jackson. Once, she had been festooned with golden tresses, her clothes and fingers adorned with rubies, sapphires, and diamonds. Now, set into the rock, she faced out into the valleys from her time-ruined home, stilled and waiting for the promise to be fulfilled. She would wait for all eternity. She had been born into the mountain dynasty of the Honghe region. When she was young, so many thousands of years ago, she remembered first waking to the light of the stars that flooded into the high caves, wafting across the curtains of her home in the Bayan Ha Mountains. The pains in her back and across her shoulders had long gone, and she'd been given, alongside her sisters, instruction in her tasks to hold dominion over the peoples and the organisms of the new territories. As the eons passed, her family had reigned without malice. Their demeanour was kind and joyful, and they were not driven by greed or jealousy, for they were eternal. Over time, because of their longevity, they acquired great wealth and comforts beyond imagination. In time, she had become the queen, a task she accepted with grace, for it set her apart from her sisters. And so, after many centuries, they allowed their authority to dwindle, for it mattered little to them. Great tribes, city-states, and then civilizations populated the wide plains and played out the rhythms of life and death. Variously, warlords, governments, communities held sway, but the mountain dynasty remained a steady influence throughout hundreds, then thousands of years, as their vast mountain range, with its arched columns of basalt, gazed across the lands and was reflected in the great rivers that sought down the seas. Images of the dynasty were spread by riverboats and trading caravans, with delicate sculptures and paintings illuminating the tales of this tall, ancient family. Even as humanity sought beyond the dying embers of the local sun into the planets and star systems beyond. But all the while, the queen and her princesses, as her sisters came to be known, remained in their mountain kingdom, with only the occasional sojourn from the towering homes where from afar they could be seen as ghosts from the past. The truth is, these creatures of light and air who became the mountain dynasty were not born in this realm. They had arrived out of sheer curiosity to watch the planets burst from the sun. They played with the cooling rocks that spun crazily in their first few billion years. But catastrophe struck, and the creatures crashed into the earth, breaking their wings, shattering their memories. They lay for 1,000 years on top of the mountains of the Bayan Ha, their blood leaking down into the river, mixing with the minerals in the silt, creating the first people of the earth. When they awoke, the creatures of light and air recuperated and observed the growing populations along the rivers. Sometimes they would wander unnoticed amongst the people and tend to their needs, herding them into safe places, protecting them from storms and floods. And in time, this close proximity to earthly forms caused their ephemeral state to gather substance, so that even when their wings returned to full health, the mountain dynasty could fly no longer. So they reconciled themselves to an eternal life amongst, at least alongside, humankind. They meandered through the great arched chambers, moved between the domains of time, swept through the skies, wingless but still floating, and created magnificent art within the ceilings and the domes of orchids and peaches, lilies and cherries. Their minds were full of yearning and dreamy threads of regret. One hot summer day, an audacious young man arrived at the main entrance of the mountain top palace. He was poorly dressed, with only a long staff to aid him on his journey from the plains to the top of the world. He possessed no malevolence, but was afflicted by the quick wit and reckless guile of unblemished youth. He had heard his mother's stories of the mountain kingdom, and was determined to see it for himself. "Please," he paused, struggling to think what he could say to persuade them. "Let me in," and he blurted. I have a gift." Perhaps it was out of boredom or amusement that they allowed this one in. There had been so many before him, begging, pleading, offering bribes and unimaginable riches, but none had intrigued the dynasty before. "Enter." The great doors unlocked themselves and whispered an intricate greeting of tiny chimes and subtle echoes. The young man had recalled the tales of beauty and majesty of the realms within, but nothing had prepared him for its scale. As the doors closed slowly behind him, a wind brushed across the long corridors, picking at the leaves of the trees and the flowers that hung from huge baskets, and globes, like clouds drifting slowly across his vision, cascaded with cherry blossom. For a moment he stood so still, he could feel his eyelashes sway in the gentle breezes. "Is it spring here?" he spoke breathlessly to himself. A voice manifested softly above his head. "It is always spring within these walls, for we live in hope and cast our minds to the eternal." The young man made himself breathe. He wasn't used to such fancy talk. He faltered slightly. "What on earth am I doing here?" he groaned to himself. "You are not really on earth, young man, not here." The floating voice curled around his head. A flurry of air brought five flowing shapes. They were the beautiful princesses of the realm, powerful and playful, their hands flicking at the air, their bodies turning sideways and disappearing, their laughter cast across the pathways while their bodies landed softly near the young man. "So you have a gift," one giggled. The others followed in a wave of laughter like tinkling bells in the wind. The young man stammered, Yes. "Oh, we so love gifts." The princesses swirled around him, their rippling gossamer capes unfurling pinks and purples, greys and teals that caressed the air and danced slowly around each other. "So are you going to give it to us?" He stared at these dazzling creatures and wondered what to do. They were so enchanting and yet so demanding. Something made him hold back. Well, that I should render it so swiftly, it would hardly be a gift but a paltry trade. He surprised himself with his bravado, but held his chin high. The princesses giggled again and disappeared. "So, I'll keep on." Cautiously, he strolled along the pathway, quickly emerging into a wide sweep of marble floors with alabaster columns and whorls of pearl clustering mightily like a forest around him. And soon he arrived at a huge chamber. It held a single vaulting throne at the back. The seat was embedded within the rock of the mountain, luxurious and golden, with the tiny carvings of animals set within its arms and a back that reared high before folding its scrolled edges into the rough-hewn rock. As he looked around, he noticed, for the first time, a feast was laid out on long curved tables in front of the throne. Food from every corner of the world fell across silver platters, copper bowls with wine and juices and effervescent mead in jars at every station. "Is it just me here?" he spoke into the air, assuming the presence of hidden ears in the silence. "Oh no," a Weasley voice appeared from behind him, forcing him to spin round to find nobody there. "But you cannot see us, for we inhabit a different space, a world that sits alongside your own. But the princesses are so delightful, are they not? Yes, they like to flit between the worlds." The voice moved towards the table, and the young man noticed that food and drink was reducing, as though a horde of other guests were sweeping through the banquet. "Eat!" A gust of voices welled around him, so he sat and consumed for what seemed an age. "Sleep!" And soon he felt himself carried to a bed. He awoke, eventually, rubbing his eyes and yawning with great exaggeration. He realized that he was not alone, for on the throne, opposite, sat a magnificent creature, the Queen herself. "So we have entertained you, and you have entertained us. We thank you." The young man stared at her flowing gowns of white and gold, made of silk that reflected the subtle starlight from the roof above. "Have I entertained you? Indeed, for no one has dared to dine with us before." The Queen smiled graciously, beautifully. "But now you must go, for if you remain much longer, you will not be able to leave. And not being one of us, you will become so lonely, you will surely die even sooner than your given years." "But must I go?" His mouth was dry, and he found his limbs a little slower than usual. "Yes, but our thanks again." A silence stretched. "You mentioned a gift." The wizened Weasley voice emerged again from behind the young man. "Oh," the young man swallowed. He had hoped this might have been forgotten. The silence plucked at the panic in his eyes. He caught sight of the staff by his bed. I brought you something that will remind you of your people below. Something so simple, you could not imagine its power." He paused, choosing his words. "And you must wait for the ultimate surprise to reveal itself." With a studied subservience, he approached the throne, held out the staff, and knelt. The resplendent figure on the throne, the Queen of the Mountain Dynasty of Hung He, reached out. She who had everything, whose sisters, their companions and consorts could ask for anything they wished, was intrigued by the rude simplicity of the offering. And she touched its earth-hewn surface, drawing it towards her. She gripped it and dwelt on the lack of elegance, absorbed by the promise of a puzzle within, of something as yet unattained. As she sat back into the golden throne, the young man saw her determined intention. He retreated, the winds of his return chasing at his heels, the front gates opening, and he fled down the mountainside. Indeed, the Queen did not let go. From that moment on, she did not move from her throne. She was ever hopeful of a surprise from this simple staff. She would wait for as long as it would take, ignoring all around her as, in time, all was worn away. The years, the centuries, the millennia passed by. The lives of the people below passed so swiftly through their patterns of life to death. So too, eventually, though, her sisters and their children faded into the winds and the sand. But she endured, sinking back into the rock of the mountain, exposed to the bright light of day and sharp cold of night, as the basalt wore down around her, leaving her to face into the skies, gripping forever the simple staff, waiting for the gift of its surprise. And still she waits in the mountains of Hung He.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. There's more information on this and other stories, plus loads of articles on Gothic, fantasy, SF, authors, art, movies, and more at thesefantasticworlds.com. See you next time.